Folks, welcome back to the iHealth channel, iHealth Radio, radio host, Hurricane H. New day, new show, awesome discussion topic, great guest. I'm so honored and excited to have with me a guest whose work I'm such a fan of. She is a distinguished allergist and immunologist who has made significant contributions to both clinical practice and digital health innovation. She's duly board certified in internal medicine and allergy. She serves as a clinical instructor at NYU Langone Health in New York. She's a national spokesperson for the American College of Allergy, Asthma, and Immunology, and shares her expertise on platforms such as Good Morning America and CBS This Morning. She's such a super active on social media, and her reels are real. I love her work. I'm a fan. I really have the pleasure to introduce you today to Dr. Tania Elliott. And today we're going to talk about some topic that is very important. And we're about just hitting the season of allergies, and we all know what that looks like. However, you know, allergy is a lot more than just a seasonal thing. And so Dr. Tania Elliott is going to take us through that journey of allergy and what it is, what constitutes an allergy. I mean, I love her reels, as I stated. She touches on a lot of things that you may not think, you know, as part of your daily problems and your health. And frankly, you know, we need more of that knowledge. So Dr. Elliott, welcome to the show. It's an honor.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Well, listen, I'm a fan, as I stated. I mean, I love your stuff. Your reels are awesome. And I would recommend anyone that if you're watching or listening right now, do check her profile and follow her, because she gives nuggets that really you need to hear. I mean, and stuff that, you know, may not only touch on allergies, overall health and fitness and wellness, you name it, she talks about it. But doctor, before I go there, I know we are limited on your time because you're very busy, and I got you today, so I'm going to maximize this opportunity. Allergy. Why allergy? I mean, I know you're board certified in just internal medicine and allergy, but why did you pick allergy specifically? I mean, it is a topic that's interesting.
So, because it felt the most to me like detective work. And it really required me to listen to the patient to figure out what was going on. And it really is one of the first fields that focused on root cause medicine. What is it that your body is reacting to? Why is your body reacting to it? What in your external environment can be triggering that reaction? What in your workplace? Who could be triggering that reaction, right? And it just requires a heck of a lot of listening. Whereas a lot of other specialties, someone's like, oh, it's my heart, I have heart failure. And the doctor's like, okay, let me prescribe you this medication. But with allergy, we're like the fifth or sixth or seventh doctor that someone finally comes to see, because they're like, there's something going on with my body, whether it's like, I think it's gluten, I think it's, you know, I'm bloated, I don't know what's going on here, or my skin is breaking out, or the traditional runny nose, coughing, sneezing, asthma type stuff. It's fun. It's this, and it really requires you having to listen. And it's this key skill in medicine called active listening and piecing together a timeline to try to figure out exactly what it is that happened that triggered this event.
I love that. Like, you're really a detective. You're investigating this stuff and listening to the stuff. And that is a big point, because as you said, I mean, some of the other medicine, you know, practices, right? You go in, you have certain, I guess, symptoms, right? You know, you discover and you kind of put your survey stuff and that's it. Okay, let's listen to your heart. We do an EKG, for example, you said the cardio. And by the way, we're not putting down any type of specialty because we need all of them. But you're right, it is more investigative because a lot of people don't even know what allergies they might have. And I mean, I've seen actually one of those tests that they put on the body and kind of like, you know, test in every single thing that's available out there. And it's pretty interesting and intriguing, but there are things that you don't even think about that could cause allergies. And I think there's some factors I'd like to ask about, you know, today, doctor. We hear a lot, for example, about children, you know, and allergies and like for peanuts, you know, for example, is a big one, right? And how dangerous those things can be. But I want to go into like the deep cause, like what is an actual allergy? How does it even work in our body and the system? What level is it? I mean, is it cellular? Is it, you know, genetic? And is it just, you know, something that gets triggered in time? Because, you know, you hear about, you know, people that don't have anything and all of a sudden they have allergies. You know, they're 20, 30 years later, oops, you know, you have allergies. What happened? Let's talk about that.
So the simplest way to describe an allergy is an abnormal reaction to something that's normally occurring in the environment. So it's here, it shouldn't be bothering us in any way. And then for some reason, our body is recognizing it as foreign and reacting to it. And there's a whole host of reasons why we're seeing an increase in allergies in children and even in adults that we can get into. But that's the crux of it. It's like, hey, like, you know, I shouldn't be reacting to like tree pollen. It's just in the air. Like, what, you know what I mean? It's just a normal, something that's normally occurring in the environment. So that's the best way to think about an allergy. Then there's also this other bucket of something called intolerance. And so an allergy specifically really means like itchy eyes, runny nose, congestion. It's all triggered by a chemical called histamine. And histamine is what's responsible for itching, redness, and swelling. But then there's an intolerance where it's a reaction that the body has, but it's almost like your body's just not agreeing with it. And so the types of symptoms we see there with intolerances and sensitivities are more like headache, GI symptoms or issues, bloating, IBS type symptoms. So you really can't put your finger on it. It's kind of like a non-specific thing. And then the other bucket, it's not quite allergy, right? But it is toxins. And this is sort of the other thing that I talk about, which is like, there's stuff out there in our food, in our home, in our environment, that's just not healthy. And we just lack awareness. We don't even realize that these things are not good for us. It's this whole forever chemicals and microplastics and something called volatile organic compounds, which are literally things that get released from like, most common thing is like when you walk into a freshly painted room and you smell that smell, those are volatile organic compounds that negatively interact with you. But they get released from like furniture, rugs. If you ever got like a new rug and it kind of has a smell and you're like, oh, let that air out. Like those are all the things that are existing in what I'm calling our indoor microbiome. So there's all these toxins floating around that are coming from products in our home, things that we spray, all these sorts of things. And so like that's applicable to everybody, not just people with allergies. So we say like allergy, itchy, runny nose, congestion, right? Indoor, outdoor allergies. Intolerances, those are things our body's reacting, doesn't cause itching, but it can cause a whole host of other symptoms. And then there's just plain old toxin that everyone needs to be aware of. And unfortunately, because we don't have the right types of regulations and things differ even by state in terms of like what's allowed to be sold. And the same thing goes for like toxins in our food, or we're talking about the artificial dyes and all that sort of stuff. Like that's really more of an awareness and why I like to do so much on social media. And I'm like, you know, I don't eat this kind of food. Why? Because it's got this stuff in it that's banned in Europe and not banned in the US. So like there's that other bucket. So it's not quite allergy, but it is something that I focus on from a health education standpoint too.
Well, thank you. That's a pretty good size and a lot of stuff in there. Well, by the way, folks, as you're watching and listening, this is what I was talking about. It's those things that you and I may not know about. As you said, there's not enough, I guess, knowledge and education about these things. And so the more work, for example, Dr. Elliott does, the more we get kind of closer to the truth of things to avoid and what to do. I mean, I've seen some of your reels and I love all of them. I mean, about the receipts, for example. I mean, you know, we all get receipts from stores. I mean, and that's, you know, really, I mean, the way you presented it, I mean, that's scary just to know that if you touch those things, you know, that stuff is going to seep into your skin and therefore it's going to affect your hormonal, you know, system, whatever the case may be. I mean, you can give us a little bit more on that, but really it's something like that. I mean, you've talked about, the stuff that's in the air, as you said, like, you know, all the sprays and, you know, all the toxins, as you said, that are available to us every day in and out. I mean, everybody's household has items that shouldn't be there. And I know you're a big advocate about just removing all that stuff. So can you just talk about some of these things that are available really that we really have to get rid of? I mean, and I also, like, for example, I love one that you talked about how you can even get iron from cast iron stuff. I mean, that's more recent. I'm just quoting some of the reels that are just, yeah, you know, recent. But these are like things that, like, when I see them, like, hello, I mean, we should have known about these things. I think we all have to be educated somehow, basic education, elementary school, about these things to avoid these things. But you're right, industry, there's all kind of factors. As you said, the legislation is not helping. State by state is, you know, a question mark there. Europe, for example, I mean, this is a worldwide show. I mean, why is it that people out there are doing better than us in some areas? And we think we're the hottest, you know, in medicine, right? And developed countries. So where we go wrong here? What are we doing?
Yeah. I mean, here's what I have to say. If the U.S. had the best healthcare system in the country and we had the longest life expectancy and we didn't have chronic diseases and we weren't dying all of a sudden exponentially of colon cancer, we're seeing it in 30 and 40 year olds, and we're seeing it in stomach, we're seeing stomach cancers and breast cancers like exponentially rising, I'd be like, do whatever you want. But like, hello, there's obviously something that's not, you know, that's poisoning us, right? And it starts with awareness. So like one of the things that's like, oh no, what's Dr. Tanya going to say today? What do I have to throw out? Like, I don't want people to feel that way. Like they got to just like go raid their kitchen and just like throw out a bunch of stuff. But really my goal is to say like, you guys didn't even know this. Like, don't heat up plastic Tupperware. And look, I used to do it. I didn't even think anything of it. And then we were able to realize that there's stuff leaching into our food. Or that black plastic kitchen utensils, for example. How are we supposed to know that when they get recycled, the recycling process can't distinguish between electronic plastic, black plastic, and black plastic that maybe came from a kitchen utensil? So then there's a chance that chemical flame retardants are in your black plastic kitchen utensils. That's the issue, because all of your like televisions, you know, like the frames for your televisions, your computers, right? That's all black plastic. So what happens when things get recycled is you can't be like, oh, this black plastic was from a electronic and this was from a spoon and this was from a whatever. So it all gets molded in together and then recycled. And so there's a chance, not saying 100%, but there's a chance that your kitchen, like black plastic forks, or when you get takeaway, right? There's like the black plastic Tupperware with a clear top that may have chemical flame retardants in it. That is toxin. There's no way that we would allow people to ever eat them. But it's one of these things that like we didn't realize the way things were being recycled, right? That then that can end up in your food. You put that thing in the microwave, it heats up, and now you literally have chemical flame retardants in your food. So it's stuff like that. You know, so my goal is to just drive awareness to be like, if it's a simple thing, like when you get takeout food, as soon as you get home, transfer it into glass Tupperware. Like that's easy enough to do. Or if you have an option of buying black plastic or maybe buying wooden utensils, buy the wooden utensils. Knowing that if you are going to use plastic or silicone, like it shouldn't be above a certain heat. So unless you're mixing cake, you shouldn't be putting it next to the stove and cooking your food with it. Non-toxic pots and pans. What kills me about those things is it says healthy, green choice, healthy choice, non-stick ceramic. And you're like, well, what's making it non-stick? A chemical, which it's fine when it's stable, but not when it's heated to super high temperatures and not when it's scratched. So those sorts of things like somehow squeak through our system, right? And like I said, I wouldn't be signaling an alarm if we weren't seeing issues with fertility, male testosterone levels being two standard deviations lower than they were 50 years ago, all this ADHD and all these cancers and all these chronic diseases, you know? So things that people should get rid of, black plastic kitchen utensils. Receipts are one of those things that like on the margin, if you touch a receipt every once in a while, it's not a big deal. But first of all, who likes receipts, paper receipts anyway? Nobody. Like, just ask for an email receipt. So if it's an easy enough thing that you know that you're not having that exposure, plus it's annoying as hell to be carrying around receipts and you throw them in your bag or whatever, like, just get it via email or say, no, thanks, you don't need a receipt. Plus, it's a heck of a lot easier to look up if you just like, I have a special email address that's like receipts@gmail.com. And so all my receipts are in one place. It's like more convenient too. And so if that's a healthy fix, like, why not? As it relates to kitchen utensils, which we get this a lot, like the non-toxic, non-stick pots and pans and things like that, my recommendation would be going for stainless steel or cast iron. And then I did do a post saying that if you cook in cast iron, you can actually have more iron content in your food, which is a good thing. And if you want even more iron in your food, you could put a little lemon on it. And then that actually leaches the iron. And you can get 75% of your daily allotted iron just by cooking in cast iron. So like, let's go old school, you know, how our grandmothers used to do it.
You know, I'm listening to you and I get this little bulb. I mean, we hear a lot about iron deficiency, right? And, you know, I mean, it's not even a difficult test. 75% is already available to you. You just have to cook in the right pot, right? And avoid all the other bad stuff that we are. And I think it's, again, I'm talking about industries, right? It's been marketed to us in a way that those are the healthy choices over a period of time. And you said it. I mean, you said use the. Listen, before I got into this health, and I've been in the healthcare, you know, in the insurance piece. When I got into the media part of it and I started getting more in nutrition, and I discovered this whole world. I'm like, where the hell was that? I mean, I stopped a lot of things. I cut a lot of things off in my life and home. But it is crazy. Like, it's everywhere. And as you said, I mean, the signs are here. We see them. Everybody's talking about like multi diseases, you know, deficiencies, you know, problems that are available to us. A lot of people have, you know, these immunodeficiencies, like they get just out of nowhere. Nobody can explain, you know, right? And you are an immunologist, right? You do, you know, that's another of your expertise. You know, like this stuff is just like out of nowhere. You talked about these forever chemicals and the plastics, and you're talking about testosterone at the lowest level potential. I mean, I've read something about how we have a level of a credit card plastic, you know, in our bloodstream or some kind of, you know, this, you know, study that shows like how much of plastic we have in ourselves. I mean, that's crazy to just, you know, even talk about it, like, you know, what planet are we on? I mean, really, we're on Earth, but it's not looking good for us. And thank you for the work you do, because at least, as you said, awareness, right? Education, awareness. And you're out there. I mean, you're not shy. You go out there. You talk about pillows. You talk about, you know, bed sheets. You talk about clothing. I mean, polyester stuff, nylon. I mean, all these prefab, you know, chemical-based, you know, stuff. You know, not even cotton, things like that. I mean, just since I mentioned that, what is that? I mean, we all have to dress up and have clothes on us. What is that take? I mean, that's like the closest thing between eating and dressing. I mean, we are already doomed if we're doing the wrong thing. So how do we even prevent that? You know, I mean, what's your advice?
As it relates to clothing, my recommendation is breathable clothing. I like 100% cotton. I like linen. I'd be careful of anything that's synthetic and anything that requires an excessive amount of processing. One of the things I talk about is bamboo sheets, which were marketed to us as being really healthy. And it's like rayon, right? They're like, think about what bamboo looks like, right? And then all of a sudden they create the softest, most amazing, beautiful sheets. Yes, they're chemically processed and it's harmful for the people that are doing the processing, and those people are getting sick, and then they release chemicals. So if you are to go that route, you want to make sure that it's GOTS certified, GOTS certified, and have other certifications to make sure that they go through standards so that they don't actually have harmful chemicals. And then anything that's like fabrics and things that are impregnated with like special soothing scents and things like that, that could be irritating to the skin. As much as we like stain resistant fabrics, which look, I've got some of it in my home, you do want to be aware that like if that's getting put under excessive heat, so let's say you have like a couch that's stain resistant and it's in a really sunny, pretty sunroom, right? And it's getting a ton of heat, then there could be off-gassing of those chemicals into the air and then breathed into your respiratory tract. So it's just like things like that to be aware of. I, as an allergist, have seen people react to the dye in clothing too. So like wearing neutral colors and things like that would be optimal. Here's the thing though, as it relates to all this, because you could go crazy. You know, what bothers me the most is that when you go to the doctor, let's say with a headache, and this happened to me, I go to the doctor, I have a headache, right? They're just like, okay, how frequently do you have the headache, and what's the headache feel like, and where are you feeling it on your head? Let me go get you an MRI and let me prescribe you migraine medications. Nowhere in that are they sitting and being like, what's in your house? What kind of candles do you have? Where'd you get the candle from? What type of cleaning agents are you using? Like, and it turned out for me, it was Fabuloso. It was making me sick as a dog. And then I had this really fancy freaking candle that I had to give away. It was like a $500 candle that anytime I lit it and I was like, you know, thinking I was going to be nice and zen and everything. And it was giving me these horrible headaches. Doctors don't get incentivized to ask you questions to figure out if there's a trigger in your home. Doctors get incentivized by doing procedures and ordering tests and all of this stuff, right? That's why it's called a fee-for-service world. So like, you're not going to get answers from doctors, nor is it part of our medical education to say, as a first line, let's figure out if there's something in your environment that you're eating, that you're breathing, that you're exposed to, that could be triggering your symptoms. And so that's why I come off as so much like, never do this, never, like, I want to catch people's attention before they're just going down this rabbit hole of seeing a million different doctors for all their issues. And it's like, well, shit, This is the food that, sorry, I cursed. The food that I'm eating, the stuff that's in my home, whatever. Like, let's start there first. Let's optimize our environment. Let's optimize what we're eating. And then if we still have an issue or a problem, then we can engage with the healthcare system. But if we start there first, you're not going to get answers. You're going to get confused. You're going to get piled on multiple medications, multiple procedures. And the trigger, the offending agent, is probably still going to be sitting in your home or in your refrigerator.
Thank you. That, first of all, I want to commend you for just listening to you. I mean, you're probably, you know, there's some resistance out there against you because you are very vocal and open about this discussion, which shouldn't be, because you're saying the truth about things. And I love what you said about the idea that you go to a doctor and you're right. I mean, they ask you questions that are basic, but they don't go into your nutrition and your environment. And that thing, because this is something that's been recurring as a topic, where you go to a doctor, they never ask you, like, well, what is your diet like? And so, you know, you can have everything kind of like fixed in a way if you have the right diet, right? And the right ingredients, but certainly they don't look in that. And again, I'm not sure, and I hear this a lot, that it's not part of the education system. It's not how it is. I get it. I mean, it is an industry. It is a moneymaker. There's you know, pharmaceutical, you know, behind it. There's all kind of stuff that goes in there. But it's kind of scary to hear that. But the other part that you just talked about is the idea of the chemical process in everything we have. I think that's, you're right. Like, we don't think about that. Like, yeah, you think bamboo, it's cool, right? But how is it made from, you know, a heavy stick, you know, that is durable, that you can use, you know, that you can even break? As a matter of fact, I've seen, you know, landscaping trying to get rid of that thing. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
And now you have this soft, you know, nice little, you know, fabric that you can put on your skin. I mean, but you don't think about the chemical transition in all these things, as you mentioned, even with the plastics, right? They're recycled. How did they put them together? That you give us something that I didn't even think about. Probably if you're watching and listening, you're probably like, whoa. You know, people are working in these industries and are exposed to this every day. We're talking about in general public use, like end users. But what about those that are in these, you know, factories that are breathing and inhaling this stuff? And I'm not sure what conditions and where they are. Those are like all things that we should be aware of. And so at least you're bringing some of that work, you know, to the world. And just, I mean, I love it. It's just giving, like, it's always about, hey, here's the information. Whatever you do with it, it's up to you. At least we bring it to people, and you're doing a terrific job. And you're on TikTok, you're on Instagram, and you're pushing that information, and you're not afraid to speak up about these things, and you're saying, you know, and you're putting it with the science. That's the beauty part of it. It's not like you're just talking, because you have the background and the education and the knowledge and the expertise to back it. Now, I'm going to go back to you put, you know, the allergies into buckets.
Yeah.
And so the intolerance, I get it. I mean, everybody can, you know, potentially come across something that their body is like, whoa, what the hell is going on? And it could be, you know, a temporary thing. But you also talked about things that are like in our world. I mean, the carpet. I mean, who thinks about, like, when there's you put a new carpet in the house? I mean, a lot of people have, or they have hardwood, maybe, whatever. There's also something that we have in the home that is filtering our air. You know, so that's actually a problem. I mean, and I've experienced that. You go to a place, you walk in, and you start sneezing all of a sudden. You know, that's something that's, I think, everybody can be exposed to, no matter where they are. Can we talk a little bit more, doctor, about just that, the filtration? I know that's another topic that impacts almost everyone, because we breathe air every day. Depends on where the quality, and you said indoor versus outdoor. Indoors, we spend quite a bit of time, especially if you're in a cold area, right?
So, multiple problems here. We spend 90% of our lives indoors. 90% of our lives indoors. That's crazy. Like, you know, 50 years ago, 100 years ago, 200, we weren't doing that. So, like, that is, like, issue number one, is the amount of time we spend indoors. Issue number two is the fact that we don't open the windows. We've got air conditioning units running and all this sort of stuff. And this has really been, like, in the last 50 years, right? Like, when I would go to my grandmother's house, we'd have, like, a fan and the windows open and stuff. And we were getting, like, good filtration and aeration. So now we've got, like, these systems in place, right? We're in these, like, sterile concrete homes, right? And then we're bringing in all of these products and ingredients and things like that that could be what we call off gas and release chemicals into the air called volatile organic compounds. And this is what is considered our indoor microbiome. So a lot of time, you've heard the microbiome, right? Where everyone's talking about their gut microbiome and the good bacteria in your gut or the bad bacteria in your gut. And that's why you get bloating and IBS. We also have a skin microbiome, right? Where the bacteria are living on our skin. And when you have bad bacteria living on your skin, you get things like eczema and you get infections and things like that. So you want to optimize your skin microbiome. There's also an indoor microbiome, which are all the bacteria and things that are living in the air and circulating in the air. And so they're all around us. So we are not paying enough attention to that indoor microbiome. It is the products that we have in our home and off-gassing everything from wallpaper and paint on our walls to our furniture. So for example, composite wood furniture that isn't solid wood is made with glue and acrylics and things. All that can off-gas into the air. Like I said before, when sunlight or UV light are hitting things that are treated with stain resistance or flame retardants and all that sort of stuff, and those things get heated up, boom, into our air. And so our indoor air quality suffers. Additionally, we've got all these filtration systems, but like, who's really setting a clock and being like, oh, time to change our air filter, time to change our HVAC system. Those things are nasty. And the second you turn on the air conditioning, like for the first time, it's like all this dust and nastiness that you just like put into your air. The other thing is we do have outdoor pollution. If you're living in inner cities and stuff, like that's suboptimal too. So when you do open the window, then you get all the outdoor pollution in there. So it's kind of like a catch 22. And then as it relates to air filters, people often don't know what type of air filter to get, the size of the air filter that matters. I started looking into like filtration systems in home, and there's all these types of filtration systems in your home. So like which type of filtration systems should you get? So to break it down, generally speaking, if you're going to get an air filter, you want to make sure that it's the appropriate size for the room. Like that's number one. Number two, you want to make sure that it's filtering out the things you want it to filter out. So if you're worried about allergies, you want to make sure that it gets rid of what you call fine particulate matter or PPM 2.5. If you're concerned about what we're calling these volatile organic compounds, which are all these chemicals that are circulating around in the air, you want to make sure that you have an activated carbon filter, which captures and then neutralizes those chemicals. So you really want to do your research as it relates to an air filter. And then you also want to make sure the system, like make sure they're reviewed, the Consumer Reports does a good job reviewing that sometimes air filters will capture the air, the polluted air, but then it will recirculate it. It'll like pop back up. It captures it. And then there's like a system where it then becomes recirculated and that polluted air comes right back into your home. So you want to make sure you do your research as it relates to air filters. One of the best things you can do though is keeping the windows open. On the margin, even if it's allergy season, or even if it's like, if you're in an inner city, if you're cleaning, or if you're cooking and you're doing stuff, or you know, you're kind of putting chemicals into the air, you want to make sure that you have your windows open during those periods of time.
Thank you, Doc. Now touching stuff. I mean, skin is our biggest organ, right? I mean, so we touch stuff all the time. I mean, you mentioned the receipts, but I mean, we're also touching things that are maybe not the receipts, but, creams and makeup, you know, stuff for ladies, for example. I know that you addressed that. You know, we are putting things on our skin, you know, beauty products and skincare. You know, is that healthy? Are they really doing more damage than actually beauty and the good stuff? I mean, again, just your take on that.
Yeah, it's really tough. So first of all, like I'm like I kind of like to think about like Cleopatra, right? Like I like to go back to like, what were they doing in ancient times? She was putting olive oil all over herself. I'm like, great, I'm gonna put olive oil on my skin. Like as few ingredients as possible is how I typically will approach skincare and natural ingredients. And there's a fine line. Like I'm an allergist. So a lot of people, the most common allergen is fragrance, right? And that can, there's synthetic fragrance is a separate thing, but fragrance in general is the most thing that most commonly causes allergy. But if you don't have a fragrance allergy, I prefer plant-based ingredients that are naturally occurring that have a natural fragrance. One thing I will say, unscented is not the same thing as fragrance-free. And I've done posts on this before. Fragrance-free means the ingredients that are used do not have a fragrance. Unscented means additional chemicals are put into the product to get rid of the scent. So now you have additional additives to get rid of a scent. It does not mean it's fragrance-free. So if you have a fragrance allergy, you want to make sure something is fragrance-free and not unscented. So that's a point about that. Then there's fragrance in general, big category, synthetic fragrance and natural fragrance. If you don't have a fragrance allergy, well, let me just say this. Don't go for synthetic fragrance, because those are things that are made in, you know, chemically created, chemically made, and they are often the things that are linked to intolerances and things like headaches and nasal symptoms and all these non-specific issues and symptoms also have been linked to issues with fertility. So synthetic fragrance is something that we're moving away from. And then there's natural fragrance. And these are fragrances that come from plants, right? Like when you go and you smell a bouquet of flowers and they smell beautiful. For me, I luckily don't have a fragrance allergy. So I love things that are like plant-based fragrances. So like my cleaning products, they're all products that I use that are plant-based, not any synthetic fragrances. And when I look, I can understand like where all the ingredients have come from. That's kind of like my rule. If I can understand where it came from and there's transparency where it's like a funny word and it'll say like, this is from the pulp of trees. I'm like, okay, good. I know where it's coming from. If it's just some like really, really long word with numbers and letters in it, don't buy it. Don't use it. So the good thing about fragrance is now there's really a movement around like clean beauty standards and at least some labeling, so you can understand like, okay, this has at least gone through some rigorous testing and process, you know, and a process to be able to get this certification if you're concerned. But the biggest issue is preservatives and the synthetic ingredients that are created in a factory that like nobody knows what the long-term effects are, but we're starting to see impacts on fertility and sperm counts and things like that.
Thank you, Doctor. You touch on quite a bit, and especially fragrances. So I'm going to have a question about that in just, which is perfumes. I mean, obviously, you know, people cannot live without them these days. Everybody sprays a bunch of them. I mean, you look everywhere, there's perfume that's being sold. Obviously, they're a big trigger, right? And you can just be in a room with someone, they walk in and they have a little bit of extra puff, you know, of whatever their preferred perfume is, and that's the end of it. I mean, listen, I have allergies personally. I mean, I get them in the fall, and they're bad. I mean, I get crazy. Typically, I go on a cruise or something like just at sea, so there's nothing close to me, like in just like plain air, right? But really, if I'm in nature, it's bad, right? So, but that's just for me, seasonal. But I also get sometimes a little excitement if I smell this perfume, you know, that walks by. It's I like strong perfumes, but some of them I just can't stand, and that's just me. But a lot of people actually are exposed to these things, whether you like them or not. You put whatever perfume you want, but if someone walks by or works with you in an office, it's over. You go in a conference room, and it's bad. What do we say about those things? I mean, is there a little tip that you can share with our audiences to kind of maybe dilute their stuff, their intake?
Yeah. So what I would recommend is opting for fragrance oils, right? That's like the roll-on stuff that like you can smell it and you smell nice, but you're not just like, it's the aerosol stuff. And then that just like sits on people's, you know, hair and on their clothing. And then they walk by and it just like sort of gets released. Whereas you don't experience that when you're dealing with like the fragrance oils. The other thing, so let's say you have a bottle of perfume. If you want to kind of be nice to other people around you, you can actually spray it in like some coconut oil or some Vaseline and almost like make your own oil and then put it on your wrist or on your neck. And then that's not, you'll still smell good and the people close to you will smell good, but you're not going to be like polluting everybody around you. So that's what I would recommend. I am a fan of fragrances, but I agree with you, like the synthetic fragrance, like I can't take it anymore if someone's wearing strong perfume. And it was actually something that happened, I think maybe as I went through perimenopause or whatever, that like it triggers my headaches. It's horrible. I will tell you the one thing, I don't understand why hotels, like it became a trend in like 2018 or something or 2017 where they would have a signature scent. And they're actually pumping fragrance through their vents. And so you walk into like any hotel and they have this signature scent and it makes me sick. And I'm waiting. I'm gonna start talking about it until hotels start doing something about it. Like have some essential oils or something like that going in the corner. But to like spray aerosols into the air, it could be incredibly triggering to people's nasal passages. It's not even an allergy, it's an irritant. This is a problem. It is an irritant. It's very irritating to your nasal passages. It can cause watery eyes, runny nose, trigger headaches, asthma attacks, things like that. So, yeah, opt for the oils.
Well, love it. But so you, this is funny that you said about the hotels, but they also have these sprays everywhere. You go to stores and they have these puffs of air that just, you know, like they're timed and they're just in bathrooms. And
how is that healthy? Well, what are we doing? Open the window. I don't know. Plant some flowers or something. Holy cow. I don't get it.
Well, thank you, Doctor.
Synthetic fragrances sprayed into the air. Here you go. Here's low fertility levels.
Yeah, I think now people will hear more about this. They'll be like, no more. I want my kids. I mean, but you're right. But so it is. I mean, the impact is beyond just the person. I mean, this is like going beyond, because I mean, it's affecting population growth here. It's affecting health. I mean, it's impacting the healthcare system because you got all these diseases and stuff. Now, I mean, some people could benefit from it, but it's a lot of things. I mean, economically speaking, it's devastating in a way. It may be good, beneficial to some and not the others. It is destructive to families. Let me imagine, we're not having kids. Well, you know what? Let's have a divorce. I mean, that could just be, and I can see that just as a link there. I mean, you can imagine all kind of stuff that can happen there. Now, that leads me to one question. Is there such thing as a inherited allergy, like something that is passed on through genes?
Yes. And so like a lot of the stuff we've been talking about have been in the bucket of toxins and sensitivities and intolerances. So let's just talk about allergy, which by definition is an antibody-mediated response. An antibody means that we've actually created memory to these normal things occurring in the environment. So let's say tree pollen, right? We've actually decided that the protein that's in tree pollen, if we are exposed to it, our immune system is ready to attack it and kill it. And so that is actually what an allergy is. And what happens is your allergy cells in your body release a chemical called histamine, and then that triggers this whole response. So you get runny nose, itchy eyes, congestion, asthma, coughing, rashes on your skin, redness, things like that. Those allergy cells used to be part of our immune system and still are. They're part of our immune system to fight off of parasites. So what's really interesting is in developing worlds, like in Africa, you don't see people with allergies because those allergy cells are busy fighting parasites and other types of infections. But here in the developed world, when we're living in these sterile environments and we're actually have a disconnect of good bacteria and bad bacteria, and it actually starts when you're in utero, and we can get into the mechanism behind that. But there's like cells in your immune system that are ready to attack normally occurring things in the environment. And it is, you know, there is a genetic predisposition for it. And then there are also factors that impact in utero, whether you're a C-section baby or a vaginal birth, whether you've been on antibiotics in your first year of life, whether you've been living in an inner city or living in a farm, whether you have animals in your first year of life and exposed to them or not exposed to them in your first year of life, whether you have siblings or not have siblings, there's lots of things that impact it, but there's absolutely a genetic association, and it literally is an immune system dysregulation.
Thank you, Doc. So what about behavioral stuff, like, you know, people drinking, smoking, you know, before they give birth, is there a link to any of those? I mean, causes? I mean, especially smoking, I would say.
So not as much of a trigger to allergies as there is asthma and like the development of your lungs. And so like asthma and allergies are related because if you have allergies, it can trigger your asthma attacks. As it relates to drinking, there is an association with drinking and shellfish allergy in adulthood. So there's two factors that we see shellfish, like you typically don't see like little kids allergic to shellfish. You see adults all of a sudden, they're like, what the heck? I'm allergic to crabs. I'm allergic to lobster. So the thinking is that due to drinking alcohol and then changes in pH in your stomach and also the use of antacids, so things like Pepcid and Nexium and stuff like that, the way that we break down the shellfish protein is different. So all of a sudden, right, like, so when you digest a food, right, it gets broken down into a bunch of little proteins and then it goes through your intestine and stuff. So because your stomach acid lining is impacted from drinking alcohol and acids and the pH is a little bit off, the way your body breaks down protein and shellfish changes. So all of a sudden it's a funny looking protein. It doesn't look the same as it did before. And that's associated with people developing a shellfish allergy.
Well, thank you. So quickly, I know I kind of alluded a little bit about the testing. Let's talk about the testing. What's available to test, you know, for allergies, and then we'll talk about remedies, maybe, and maybe natural, versus not natural.
So there's lots of tests available, and you can go online and get like 200 different allergy tests and find out what you're allergic to. The challenge with that is you can have a positive test and it doesn't mean anything. So like I have patients that come to see me and they're like, I think I'm allergic to milk. And I'm like, okay, what'd you eat yesterday? Well, I had pizza and ice cream. Well, you're not allergic to milk, because if you were, your face would be blown up, right? So like, so the way to really make a diagnosis is you have a history, like, right? I had a lick of ice cream and all of a sudden I felt itchy. I ate shellfish and all of a sudden I felt this. So the history should direct the testing, and then the testing confirms your history. So the best thing that you can do if you're like, I think I have an allergy, is to literally write down everything you've eaten, and then we can test you to those specific things. But it's not like we're going to suddenly uncover something that you're allergic to or intolerant to. Like, there's not evidence. Like, there's these food intolerance tests and these panel tests and all that sort of stuff. Like, save your $200. Write down a list of the stuff that you've eaten. We can sit together and go through that list. I will tell you the most likely things that are triggering your allergies. The test does not correlate with that. Because there actually isn't an immunologic test to say, like, oh, this marker is up or this number is up for any kind of intolerance or any kind of sensitivity. And I could flip a coin. You could have a positive test to milk and not be allergic to milk. It really is only confirmed as an allergy if you say, I ate ice cream and my face blew up, and then we do a test and the test is positive. So, like, the testing industry and testing market is a little bit whack right now. And I don't like how we are misrepresenting to people that you're going to find out what you're allergic to. Yeah. The other thing is, like, there are common culprits. So, like I said, if I saw a list of all things you've eaten, I would say, like, let's start with elimination and let's eliminate these three things. And then you tell me how you feel. And that's really the way to handle people who have intolerances and sensitivities. So, like I said, save your couple $100. Those tests are not helpful.
Thank you. That I know we're crashing all the time. Now let's talk about the post, you know, you have a diagnosis. Now you need a treatment. What are some of the things that you are pro and some things that you're against? Because I know there's a lot of products out there, especially allergy season now. I mean, they all stocked up in shelves, right? You got all the antihistamine, you know, stuff and the Claritin D's and so on and so forth. Some are good, Flonases and all that. And then you have some remedies. Some people say get raw honey. I mean, it's good, the local honey. So what's your take on that? I mean, certainly you help people get better, but what is your formula? I'm leaning towards natural, but.
So the first line of treatment is avoidance. Well, first we have to understand what you're allergic to, right? And then the first line of treatment is avoidance of your triggers. So, like, if you are allergic to tree pollen, there are, like, these little nasal filters you can get on Amazon that actually, like, can block the allergen from getting into your nasal passages. When people were wearing masks, actually their allergies got better, right? So, like, those little things, like, if we can identify, okay, my allergy season, if I'm allergic to tree, is March till the end of May. What are the things that I can do so that I'm not as exposed to this type of pollen? You could wear the little nasal filters when you're outside. As soon as you come inside, you want to get in the habit of washing your clothes and then just rinsing off in the shower. Like, don't ever, like, just come home, sit on the couch, and then go to bed, because now you've tracked all that pollen into your house and then you're sleeping on what you're allergic to. During allergy season, wear sunglasses. Don't wear hairspray because the pollen likes to stick to your hair. If you get fake eyelashes, skip fake eyelashes because it will get stuck in between your lashes. So those are the things, like, you can do from an avoidance perspective to minimize the amount of pollen that you're being exposed to in the first place. So, like, that's first. And an air filter, like, right in your entryway. So those are some things you can do. But it's hard, right? Like, trees are everywhere. So in terms of medications, if we want to talk about, like, pharmaceutical medications and things like that, antihistamines are helpful, like your Zyrtex and Allegra's and your things like that, on an as needed basis. Zyrtex can make people a little bit drowsy. I don't recommend Benadryl to anyone because it can cause forgetfulness. It's been associated with dementia. It's not even as effective as some of the other allergy medicines. So, like, ditch the Benadryl. And then nasal steroid sprays. So things like Flonase or Nasonex. A lot of times people will say to me, my nasal spray doesn't work. And that's because they're only using it as needed. People need to understand that nasal steroids like Flonase and Nasonex need to be in your system for at least 5 days. So those are your maintenance medicines. That's like, okay, I don't want to have to think about my allergies from March to May. I'm going to keep my nasal spray right next to my toothpaste and do two sprays each nostril every day for the whole allergy season. Because what it does is it calms down all the inflammation in your nasal passages and prevents the allergic attack from occurring. So if we're going to talk about over-the-counter medications, nasal steroid sprays, and then as needed antihistamines. If you want to talk about all natural options, nasal saline rinses. So sinus rinses twice a day. Like, if you think about it, all this stuff's getting stuck in your nose, flush it out of your nose, just like we wash our hands, right? So doing that twice a day. If you don't like the nasal saline rinses with a neti pot, just carry a nasal saline spray and just spray it in your nose, like, throughout the course of the day. I like hot showers with eucalyptus, where you could buy some fresh eucalyptus, like they have it at Whole Foods for $5, and hang it there, and you can breathe that in. Another thing you could do is take a pot of hot water, add some fresh ginger, and breathe that in, and that helps to calm down the inflammation in your nasal passages and in your sinuses and in your lungs. Local honey, some people swear by it. The thinking is that bees are pollinating flowers, right? So there's pollen in it. And so if you take it, you're basically getting like natural immunotherapy. The problem with it is most bees are pollinating very bright floral, like flowers. Those tend to not be the things that trigger the allergy. So like most people are allergic to birch tree and oak tree or maple tree, right? Those are not the things that the bees are pollinating. So you have a mismatch of the pollen that's inside the honey and what you're truly allergic to. But honey has antibacterial properties, and oftentimes you will have infections plus allergies in one. And also it's soothing to the throat. So like if people like it, I'm not knocking it. And then the last piece as it relates to something natural is something called immunotherapy, where that's where we actually find out what you're allergic to, and we put it in a little mixture, and we give you small amounts of what you're allergic to, and we build up your tolerance over time. And you can get that in the form of a shot at the doctor's office or drops underneath the tongue. And there's some companies online that offer where you get like 2 drops under the tongue each day, and we slowly increase the amount of allergen that you can tolerate to train your body to no longer be allergic. And that's called immunotherapy. And in my mind, that is like the most natural way to actually cure you of your allergies.
Well, thank you. I know I'm conscious about your time. I'm trying to squeeze it as much as I can.
What else you got?
What about steam room and sauna? I mean, people use those, especially, I mean, we hear about hot yoga, for example, and all these places. And you mentioned something about, you know, the aroma, right? Therapy or whatever, the eucalyptus stuff. Does that affect in anything? Or if, let's say, somebody goes into a room with a steam, then there's some of that stuff that's not, you know, helping them. Is that a problem? Is that a trigger? Is it something good for us?
Yeah. So there's like benefits of dry heat, benefits of wet heat. For the most part, dry heat and sauna is better overall for your cardiovascular health. Wet heat, this is one of the only times where I recommend wet heat or steam is for people with respiratory issues and allergies. I don't like public steam rooms and things like that. Like if you can just like be in the shower and get it really hot, or if you can literally take a pot of hot water, bring it to a boil, and kind of breathe in that humidified air, like localized steam treatments. Those are beneficial to help open up the nasal passages and respiratory passages. Walking on the beach, walking in sea air, that's another thing that can help to with allergies and asthma type symptoms. The one thing you have to worry about with humidity and humidifiers is it makes mold allergy worse and it makes dust mite allergy worse. So a lot of times people are like, oh, I just have a humidifier in my bedroom, and it actually can worsen certain indoor allergies. So you want to be careful with like having humidifiers and things in your rooms. And that's why I always recommend kind of like a local humidified treatment that you could do to yourself here and not just like increase the overall humidity level of your home.
All right. So, Doc, thank you so much. Now, one more question. This is about your work, because you do beyond this. I mean, you also are huge with digital telemedicine and digital transformation of, you know, health, you know, outcomes and things like that for patients. Can you tell us a little bit about that and the work you do in that area, in that space?
So I was doing telehealth and telemedicine before it was cool. So I started like before everyone knew what it was. When COVID hit, right, everyone's like, oh, telemedicine. I was doing it since 2013. So that's sort of been, I've been at the forefront of healthcare innovation for a long time. And it was very much like, I didn't like how people had to take time off of work to come into my office, everything on my terms, 9 to 5. I'm like, you know what? Let me come to you. Click a button and I'll pop up on the other side of the screen. And plus you could give me a video walkthrough of your home. You can show me your office. We could have a conversation. I felt like I could get to know people better. I was seeing more into their everyday life. Add on a layer of like wearable devices and your Apple Watch and you being able to share that information with your doctor. And it's like, oh, why was your heart rate up on this day? Were you working out? No, I was in a fight with my husband. Okay, well, what's going on? You know, and so you get all this information that could really target your conversation with patients and really understand what's happening the 99.9% of their life that they're not in the doctor's office. Like, it's really silly if you think about it, that you get plucked out of your life and get 15 minutes with a doctor to have a conversation, and you're supposed to remember everything about your health. And then they're like, okay, here you go. Here's a prescription. See you later. Like, I didn't like that model, because we have technology now that can bring doctors and patients closer together through video interactions, through messaging. I can monitor your symptoms, check in, see how you're feeling through text. You could upload wearable and device data and all that information. So over the last 15 years, my focus has been helping doctors, health care institutions, insurance companies understand that there are better ways that we can get information with our, from our patients and help our patients. And my biggest goal is like, keep you healthy in your everyday life. Like if you're coming in to see me in my office because you're sick, like I should lose money, not make money. Like I'm not doing my job. I want to give you all the tools and everything that you can to keep you healthy at home. And so that's why this most recent chapter of my career has been focused on education and empowering people. All you have to do is look on social media and there's like one little thing you can do to be healthier. So that's sort of like how it kind of rounds it all out. It's like, let's innovate and do a better job in terms of how we interact with patients. And let's empower people with accurate information so they're informed to make healthy lifestyle choices.
Yeah, I pioneer, and you do actually have pop-ups in on TV, on national, you know, programming. I mean, you're all over the place, and you're really bringing, you know, the information to people and really helping. Now, you mentioned something about your office. Where is your office? So, if someone wants to actually physically, you know, work with you on their allergy, or their family members, or referral, does that you still do this? I mean, I'm assuming you still practice, right?
Yeah, I'm faculty at NYU. Most of my focus, though, has been really on like health education. So like following me on social media is super helpful. Engaging with me when I do like ask me anythings and stuff. Like I really focus a lot more of my time on like how I can answer the questions that matter most to you. So follow me on social media. I'm going to be launching a Substack soon too, which will be fun because we'll be able to have a chat function and we'll be able to do live videos and I'll bring on guests to help answer like super pressing questions on topics that are super complicated. And then we're going to get into it.
All right. Well, listen, I think I've almost hit the hour with you, and I know we were limited. I mean, I wish I had more time, but doctors, thank you so much for being with us and really giving, I mean, you gave us so much stuff today that people can take it to the bank and really apply some of it. Even 10% of what you said today can make, you know, their life a better life. And certainly they have you and they have access to you fully. And certainly now when you have, you know, your Substack, you know, I'll keep track, you know, of all the stuff and I'll keep sharing and hopefully, you know, we'll get more word out there. Thank you so much, doctor, for your time and for everything you do out there.
Thanks so much for having me.
A true pleasure. All right, folks, that's it for today. I told you this is going to be an interesting, you know, topic and definitely a terrific guest and a lot of information. We'll be talking soon. New Danish on a topic. Bye for now.